Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the July 8th, 2019 For Your Benefit radio show. And who better to have on than Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, GovExec columnist, co-host of the show, seminar presenter. What else, Tammy?
Well, I think you covered the waterfront, Bob. Good to see you, good to hear from you today, and I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for putting up with me. With all 30 seconds to go, I just got here. Anyway,
yeah, you made it just in time.
Well, good. Yeah, too much prep time is tough, huh, Tammy? Not really.
That's right. We're used to doing it on the fly. We're old hat at this, you and I.
You got that right. So, the importance of the beneficiary election and beneficiary forms, how would one even know to fill out forms? Is there some common, in your world, when you talk with people, misconception that it would go to my spouse if I'm married or my best friend if I'm not?
Yeah. Well, I guess today our topic is going to be death benefits, which unfortunately that's not a real uplifting topic, but we're going to do our best to make it informative and educational. So I think it is important information. And starting off with beneficiary designations is a good place to start, because when employees come on board into federal service, of course, they get copies of their beneficiary forms to fill out. And oftentimes people will fill it out and they'll name their mother if they're not married, or father, or their sister, or their spouse if they are married. But what happens throughout the career is that sometimes life changes. We get married, or we get divorced, or someone passes away. So we need to keep those beneficiary designations up to date. So I find sometimes that employees neglect to update all of them, because there's more than just one. There's one for your retirement, whether it's CSRS or FERS. There's another beneficiary designation for your life insurance, which we call FEGLI, Federal Employees Group Life. There's a third one for your thrift savings plan account, and then there's even one for what they call unpaid compensation. So you have that one to fill out as well. So these forms, you can find them. If you do need to update a form, go on to opm.gov, the Office of Personnel Management.gov, and right at the very top of the page, you'll see forms. And under the forms icon, these are all standard forms, with the exception of the TSP-3. And the TSP beneficiary form, you can find at tsp.gov. But I think that's a really good place to start, because no time like today to keep those up to date, because there have been cases, and anyone who's ever worked in HR could relay a case to you where someone has passed away and the wrong person, we assume, got the money, whether it's the mother in the nursing home or the ex-spouse. And those things happen, and it's very hard to explain to the family why those benefits can't be paid to who they thought they should be.
Are there any common misconceptions that you've run into where, oh, I didn't know I had to do that. I thought that was automatic if I got divorced, if I got married, if I moved, where somebody didn't make the election.
It is kind of an automatic precedence if there is no beneficiary designation on file. So for employees who said, I'm happy with the standard order of precedence where everything goes to my spouse if I'm married, if I don't have a spouse, then to my children in equal shares, and if I don't have children, then to my parents if living, and if my parents are deceased, then it goes according to my will, if I have a will. And if I don't have a will, then we follow the rules of the state and everything goes to next of kin. So if you're happy with that order of precedence, that's the way things would typically get paid out on all of those federal benefits. But in many cases, someone either wants to change that order of precedence, or they just want to make it clear, you know, these are my wishes, this is who I want to get the money. And so they name that on a beneficiary form, which is fine as well, but you want to make sure you keep those up to date.
Is it hard to get across, once you've got the beneficiary designation, well, what if? I mean, the what if, I guess, would follow, okay, we've done a lot of the hard work, we've zeroed in on that person. Sometimes it's easier than others. But then what happens if something happens to that person, like a secondary beneficiary?
Yeah, so a lot of people will do that. They'll name alternate beneficiaries or contingent beneficiaries, they're typically called. And if you don't have that, if you just have on there, let's say you have 100% to my spouse, and that's it, then if your spouse has predeceased you, then it goes back to the standard precedent. So if you have a child or if you have a parent living, it'll just follow that natural order of precedence.
Okay, now things that might go to our loved ones, accumulated leave, money
right.
in the thrift. That's probably a show in and of itself, the second one. What about accumulated leave, and then we can go to the thrift?
Yeah, well, the one for your final accumulation of leave, because that's your unpaid compensation, along with your last paycheck and anything else the agency might owe you. In other words, the employee may have just come back from a trip and they're owed travel expense money. So any of that type of compensation that the agency hasn't paid out yet, that's going to go to your designated beneficiary for unpaid compensation. So that's the one for that. And that's held at the agency in your official personnel folder. So if you're looking to find out, did I file one of those or who did I designate, you can go into your electronic official personnel folder and you'll find the originals of the unpaid compensation, the one for your FERS retirement, not CSRS, and the one for life insurance or FEGLI. The one for CSRS retirement is filed with the Office of Personnel Management. For whatever reason, OPM doesn't get the FERS beneficiary designation until after you retire. And the one for TSP is always maintained with the TSP.
Okay, I'll put on my employee hat, and I go, gee, I didn't know that I could access my computerized records. Do you find, other than me, do you find people that don't know that they can access or that they didn't
Absolutely.
Access? Okay, I thought you might say that.
That's one of the things that does surprise me, because in the good old days before we had computer access, we had those cardboard folders, and they had the onion skin papers inside held together by an ACCO fastener. And every form that went into that file, the employee got a copy that said employee copy. And we used to tell our employees, you make sure you keep those employee copies, set yourself up with a personal personnel folder at home. And most employees did that. They kept their own copies so they could have a duplicate of everything. But today, with everything being electronic, I think we neglect to either print those out or save our employee copies of those forms, and it's sometimes not certain how you get a hold of those electronic personnel folders. So some employees need to get some information about how to access those files. So you want to contact your HR office, and they can instruct you about how to go about seeing the forms in the file. And for some employees who work for intelligence agencies, they can't just go online to look at it. They have to actually have HR help them through that, because those are considered classified.
Wow. So if somebody didn't know any better, let's say we know of an individual that has a friend, and in their will they said, my friend will inherit my TSP. But our friend might not be married to us. Is there an issue there? In other words,
there can be. Yeah, absolutely. Because if it's in the will, the will comes after the beneficiary form. It comes after the spouse, after the children, after the parents. So as long as there are none of the above, then the will would take precedence. But I wouldn't rely on a will to direct the money in any of these benefits. I would file a beneficiary form if you're changing that standard precedence order. That's going to be your best bet, because that beneficiary designation always takes precedence.
Okay. In your consulting, I'd imagine this subject is discussed. And maybe a year after you all talked about this person being a beneficiary, and then they want to change it. How hard is it to change it? Certainly they should call you first, but how hard is it to change?
Oh, it's easy. It's just a one-page form. I think the hardest part is when you're making the designation to make sure you make it in the proper way. And every beneficiary form has about 3 pages of examples of how to name that beneficiary and how to name a contingent. Or if you want to have a family trust be the beneficiary, and then the rules of your trust will take precedence, you can make the beneficiary payable to your trust, and that'll follow that precedence as well. So, yeah, you want to make sure that they're filled out with no erasures, no errors. Most of these forms are fillable. Some of them you do have to print out and use an ink pen, and they do have to be witnessed. So you'll do it with your coworkers or your neighbor and have them witness your election. They do not have to be notarized. In fact, I had a woman one time who did get hers notarized, her signature on there, which you don't even have to sign it, and it went to the TSP, and they sent it back to her, and she didn't know why for sure, so she went back to the bank and had it notarized again and got it back again and didn't realize that that's why it was coming back. The notary seal would make it invalid. So it's just simple witness signatures on it and your no erasures and very clean form, because this is a form that sometimes has to stand up in court if anybody is going to say that they're the beneficiary and they may not be.
Well, we'll let everyone think about your response to that, and we'll take a break and we'll listen to what WAPA can do for the listening audience. WAPA is in the business of life insurance for federal employees, and we brushed on that, but let's hear what they have to say.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you: WAPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WAPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WAPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WAPA to Fegley, visit waepa.org today. WAPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network, 1500 a.m. WAPA has been insuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WAPA at waepa.org.
Welcome back to the July 8th, 2019 4-Year Benefit show with Tammy Flanagan, and co-host of the show as well. Senior Benefit Director. Well, I think people know you by name. All the titles, we could spend 10 minutes with the titles, but they know Tammy. Tammy says.
That's not necessary. That's right.
Okay. Issue with regards to benefits payable, is there a difference between somebody that would die while in service versus somebody that passes after they retire?
Yeah, so we were talking about beneficiary forms before the break, and those only designate lump sum payments, whether it's the lump sum value of your life insurance or the lump sum value of what you have in your TSP account. And when it comes to civil service and FERS retirement benefits, it's only designating who would get a return of your contributions. So if an employee were to die in service before retirement, they would have that lump sum of retirement contributions. However, if they're married or if they have dependent children, that beneficiary would not pay out the lump sum benefit, but instead the rules for survivor benefits would take over. So that means that if you have a surviving spouse or possibly a former spouse with a court order, they would get the spousal benefit of that employee who passed away, which is a whole different amount. It's a basic employee death benefit. And along with that, if the employee had enough service, the surviving spouse and possibly also the children would get a recurring survivor benefit on a monthly basis. And the spouse could receive that benefit for life. So there's a difference between what's paid out as a lump sum by the beneficiary designation and then, on the other hand, what's paid out by law to a surviving spouse or a former spouse who has this written into the court order. Or if you have young children or children who are still in school, up to the age of 22, they have entitlement to this benefit as well, a separate recurring children's benefit.
Wow. Now,
I know.
Over the years, I've dealt with marriages that have gone awry, or it was years ago, and I'm sure you more so than I. But there is an issue with regards to OPM's responsibility to take over at one point, and regardless of what somebody says verbally, doesn't something need to be written, and isn't there some archives that somebody could refer to?
Yeah, so if an employee or a retiree, for that matter, goes through a divorce, they're going to generally have an attorney help them out and write the divorce decree and the separation of all the benefits. And there is strict rules, as you and I both know, about the wording of that divorce decree when it comes to their federal benefits. So the Office of Personnel Management has a handbook available for attorneys, and it has examples of that language. So usually it's in the best interest to have that strict language followed, because then your court order becomes acceptable for processing, and there would be very little delay in the processing of it. Whereas if you didn't write it in the proper language, you could end up going back to court, and have it rewritten, and it causes delays and more money anytime you go back to court. So, yeah, it's a pretty tedious process, but it's very important to have it done correctly and to make sure that it's been accepted by OPM. So when you've gone through a divorce, make sure a copy of that court order has been submitted to the court order section at OPM so that they can review it and then deem it as a court order acceptable to process.
Wow. Okay, benefits payable to an employee if an employee passes prior to retiring. So we oftentimes, you and I think retirement at or around age, but let's say somebody mid-career, early career, or late mid-career. What benefits would then go, would it be dictated by the individual's will? And can the
Well, it'd be basically dictated by who survives the employee and the way that they passed away. So there's a difference if the employee died as a result of a work-related injury or possibly even an illness caused through their workplace. Like we had that time years ago when there were some office buildings that were causing employees to become ill. So those were considered work-related illnesses. So if the employee passes away through a cause caused at work, then the Office of Workers' Compensation through the Department of Labor would pay the spouse and the children benefits that are payable through that program, which those are tax-free benefits. They're a little more generous than the things benefits payable by OPM as far as the regular survivor benefit. So the surviving spouse and children would be getting those benefits instead. But if the employee just passed away from an illness or something not related to work, then the employee's survivors, whether it be the spouse or parents or children, would contact the HR office. And the HR office would then direct them to what forms need to be filled out and how to go about requesting those benefits that are payable.
Okay, children can come in different ages. So is there any more attention paid to a child of a deceased person if they were, say, under 21 versus if they were over 21?
Well, if it's a child who's a minor, then there's generally going to be a guardian appointed to take care of the affairs of that child. Now, if the child is old enough, even if they're 18 and they're in college and they can receive those benefits, then OPM will pay them to the child who's considered an adult. So it just depends on the child themselves. Or if it's a handicapped child, there might be a guardian appointed to help, you know, handle the affairs of them as well. That's another thing that's payable to a child who's no longer able to support themselves or they have a lifelong handicap. They can be entitled to children's benefits for life in many cases. So there's also benefits payable there. And if someone wanted to go through and really find out more about these things, because these are not topics that you want to keep in your brain in the forefront, but someday they might be important. So you may want to go over this with your family and go to the Office of Personnel Management under the Retirement tab. And under there, you'll find life events. And you can find out information about how to report the death of an employee or a retiree and what benefits are payable and in what order, and even how to designate a beneficiary. So there are some good instructions out there that employees can refer to keep up to date with any changes to this and to make changes that might occur in their own life.
All righty. When we look at assets, this is collectively we, at somebody's passing as a federal employee, I think one of the primary focuses is on the annuity. Is there a survivor's annuity? Is there not? We look at the thrift. But one that has an awful lot of power over the years would be the federal health benefits. Is there an assumption made with the surviving spouse and or children with regards to the health benefits?
Yes. Yes. So in order for a surviving spouse or a surviving dependent child to continue coverage under the federal employee's health benefits, there has to be a survivor benefit payable. So if an employee were to die in service, that's a pretty automatic benefit. The agency would help the survivors take care to get those benefits and also to continue the health benefits as long as those family members were covered under a family plan or a self-plus-one plan at the time of death. That shouldn't be a problem. But in the case of a retiree, sometimes you'll have an employee who retires and who says they and their spouse will have a conversation saying that they really don't need the survivor benefit for the financial part of it. So the spouse will waive their right to get a survivor's annuity not realizing perhaps that they're also waiving their right to continue health benefits. So it's very important for an employee at the time of retirement to take into consideration not just the financial aspect of electing a survivor benefit, but also the ability for that surviving spouse to someday continue health benefits, especially if they're not a federal employee themselves and may not have entitlement in their own right to carry that.
How would somebody, this is an impossible question to answer. Why am I asking it? So how would somebody know that they would be in that position, that they were entitled to something, but it wasn't clear?
Yeah, and that's the problem, is that you're exactly right, that sometimes you make these elections at the time of retirement thinking that you're doing the right thing, but when the time actually comes where you have to go to claim that survivor benefit and you're saying, what about my health insurance? And OPM says, well, you know, they didn't leave you a survivor benefit, so therefore you're also losing your health insurance. So it really does pay to know these things ahead of time, and that's why we try to, like we're doing today, try to give this information out to give employees a chance to think back and look over their records and make sure that they're making the right decisions and also that they understand the different things that can be impacted by making a certain decision one way or the other. So I think it's good that we talk about these things from time to time, even though this week of you know, happy summer times is not necessarily a time when you want to think about this, but it is important.
All right. You present an awful lot of seminars, and you go A through Z with the benefits. You're, of course, on the show and doing the same thing. And as I understand it, you also answer questions from people, but not necessarily just answer questions. They can hire you as a consultant. Am I right with that?
That's right. That's right. I have, in recent years, started working with clients individually. We used to get this question all the time, and I always hesitated before I would take on a client because I always felt that the type of information I provide, it used to be the type of thing we'd do in the benefits office at the agency, and the employees would come down and they'd sit down with a cup of coffee and would tell them all about their civil service retirement, which was a single benefit plan, fairly uncomplicated, although very generous, and the job got done in that setting. But these days, with much more complication through the three-tiered FERS system, where we have to coordinate our FERS retirement benefit with claiming Social Security retirement and then trying to figure out what to do with this money that we've been saving up in the TSP. So retirement has become more complicated to plan for and more complicated in some respects to claim the benefits as well. So sometimes employees have specific questions about these different decisions they have to make at the time of retirement. So it has seem to be a pretty good service to provide and provide some assistance to employees who need that individual help.
All righty. And in your work at the seminars as well as the consulting, what have you found that maybe surprised you that you thought people, I won't say ought to know, but they had some feel for it, but they don't, and you tell them, and it's a significant benefit. So brag on yourself
well,
a little
on
bit.
Sure. Well, on this topic that we're kind of focusing on today, which is the death benefit or survivor benefit, I think one of the things that I help employees see a little bit more clearly is the fact that when you have a dual federal couple, meaning you have a husband and wife, both working for the federal government and both planning to retire, in fact, sometimes similar salary, similar work history, and they get to the point of retirement, and you have to fill out the application to elect a spousal survivor benefit, which is going to cause about a 10% reduction to your retirement. So they'll wonder, do I need to take a reduction to my benefit, and therefore does my spouse also need to take a reduction so that we each get each other's benefits if one of us predeceases the other? And many times employees don't think that's necessary since they each have a pretty generous retirement of their own. But what I try to point out is the fact that while there's two of you, and you're both receiving retirement, and you're both getting a Social Security benefit, and you both have, you know, money in your TSP account, life is good. But you have to think down the road that what happens when there's one of us? And when that surviving spouse loses one of those Social Security payments and then potentially also loses their spouse's federal retirement benefit, that can be devastating financially. So we have to think in terms of we can leave each other a survivor benefit. And then when we become the surviving spouse, we can restore our annuity back up to the unreduced amount. So we stop that 10% reduction at the same time that we start receiving that 50%, or in the case of CSRS, 55% survivor benefit from our spouse who had just passed away. So a lot of times we underestimate the value of that election, and sometimes we even overestimate the cost of it, because it is providing such a valuable benefit. There's a reason why it does cost that 10% reduction.
Wow. Well, you didn't elicit this email. It came in just now. And I'm interested on how a divorce spouse impacts my federal annuity benefits if we were married more than 10 years. I think you touched on that, but I don't know that we maybe you mentioned the 10 years, but if you did, it went over my head. And then there's
we didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but that's a good question, because we've kind of been focusing so far pretty much on just the benefits administered by the Office of Personnel Management, and those benefits to a former spouse are directed by the divorce decree. So it doesn't matter if you've been married 2 years or 22 years, it all boils down to what it says in the divorce agreement. But the 10-year requirement, that's a rule that relates to Social Security. So if you've been divorced but you were married to your former spouse for at least 10 years and you haven't remarried, your former spouse has entitlement to spousal benefits and widow's benefits if you predecease them. So when you file for Social Security retirement, they're going to ask you through the application process, are you married? Do you have any former spouses? Do you have any young children? Because there's different family members, or former family members, I guess, in that case, that may have entitlement to benefits based on your work record. And those benefits won't reduce the amount of your Social Security, but they are benefits payable, sometimes to a former spouse or to your young children or, of course, your current spouse as well.
And it's interesting here that this is law that maybe the one spouse doesn't want the other one to have anything. They don't have to ask. They're entitled to it. All righty. And then the final, there were three questions. We did two. And how would my former spouse impact my TSP?
Well, again, that's going to boil down to the court order. And that is taken care of at the time of the divorce. So when the time comes to retire, what's left in your TSP account is yours. But at the time you go through the divorce, which may have occurred 10 years before retirement, then that divorce decree is going to stipulate whether or not that TSP account is going to be partially distributed to the former spouse, where they can roll that money into their own TSP account if they're federal, or into their own 401k or IRA as well. So that the TSP part at the time of the divorce is generally taken care of by dividing the balance in that account at the time of the separation or divorce.
Okay, this is, I would say this is more, this was a subject people didn't want to talk about and maybe people didn't want to know about. And I think you hit it bullseye. So here's another, this is a question that was that you wrote up for this. Does a former spouse have entitlement to widow's benefits from Social Security?
Yep, and that goes back to the 10-year question. So if you've been married for at least 10 years and your former spouse has passed away, you still can claim the benefit as a widow even though you've been divorced. So if you have, if you remarry before age 60, if you remarry before age 60, you'll lose entitlement to that. But if you marry after age 60, you can still claim the widow's benefit at the same time you might be married to someone else. So that's kind of crazy to think about, but it's true. And again, when you go through the claiming process for Social Security, which you can do either online at ssa.gov, or you can call the 800 number, or you can make an appointment and go to your local Social Security office, but no matter which way you file for benefits, there's going to be a series of questions to find out what benefits you might have entitlement to, and then go from there to see which one's going to have the most value to you at that time.
Okay, here we go again. Are you married, single, widowed, or divorced? That's the question. How does your marital status impact your retirement election for survivors and benefits?
Yes. So again, this time we're going back to the CSRS or FERS retirement application. So at the time of retirement, one of the questions on the retirement application says, are you married now? So if you're married on the day of retirement, of course you're married now, and therefore your current spouse has a right to the full survivor benefit, which means you'll take that 10% reduction, and if you predecease your spouse, they would get the recurring lifetime survivor benefit payable. But if you're not married on the day of retirement, but let's say you get married after you retire, then on the day of retirement, you'll make an election as if you're single, because you are, and generally that just means you're going to take a retirement benefit payable during your lifetime. And when you pass away, it dies with you. But if you marry afterwards, then you'll have a two-year window. I sometimes call it kind of facetiously a two-year test drive to decide if you want to provide a survivor benefit for your new spouse. And if you do it within that two-year window, you can provide the same spousal benefit you could have elected at the time of retirement. And you'll have to pay for that. That 10% reduction will go back to your retirement date, and it will be kind of actuarially spread out over your life expectancy, so you don't have to come up with a large lump sum, but you will take a larger than 10% reduction to provide it. So if you're married, you can do the full automatic, kind of the default election, which is the maximum survivor benefit, which is going to be the 10% reduction. Or if your spouse doesn't really need the money, but they need the health benefits, then you can elect a partial survivor benefit with your spouse's consent, which is half as expensive and half as generous. So you're taking a 5% reduction, leaving your spouse 25% of your FERS retirement, and that way they can still maintain health benefits. So you have basically those three elections: full survivor benefit for my spouse, partial for my spouse, no survivor benefit if I'm single, or my spouse has waived both the partial or the full. And then there's two other elections which are very seldom used, but there's one called insurable interest, where I can name a person, an individual, to receive a survivor benefit if I can show that I'm in good health and this person has a financial need for my life expectancy. So oftentimes that can be used if you're living together in a committed relationship, and you want to make sure that that person would receive some financial support if you were to die first. You can do the insurable interest. And then finally, the last one is for your former spouse. If it wasn't in the court order, you can volunteer that benefit. But again, I rarely see that one used.
I guess not. I think, Andrew, it's probably time to take a break, because the next question probably take longer to ask than to answer. Anyway, we'll be back in a few.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit, and today really is for your benefit. Co-host Tammy Flanagan is talking about things with regards to beneficiary forms, surviving spouses, children from the past as well. And I'm probably going to have to listen to this slow two or three times, but I'll learn more than what I knew before we went on air. So here's I don't know if you remember, this was probably 15 years ago. Had an attorney come in, and there was a situation where an individual was married in the past and then remarried. More recently, they met whatever the test was for years. But the question was the prior spouse entitled to an annuity benefit based on, I think it was not only years in service, but, you know, were they married during that period of time? And I think it was close to some number where if they weren't a federal worker, they don't get anything. But am I making sense, Tammy? No more than usual, huh?
I'm trying to rack my brain to remember the case you're talking about. But I think the bottom line for a former spouse and having also a current spouse at the same time is, I kind of say this in my seminars, that it goes by first come, first served. So when it comes to the former spouse, to find out if they have any entitlement to your benefits, it has to be written in that divorce decree. So if it's silent, if it doesn't mention anything in the divorce decree to be paid from FERS or CSRS to your former spouse, then nothing gets paid. So there's nothing that says if you were married a certain period of time, it's going to be automatic. So it really has to be spelled out specifically in the divorce decree. So it makes it clear from that standpoint. And there are many cases when the divorce doesn't award benefits. You know, they both might be federal employees, and they'll say, you know what, I'll go my way, you go your way, and we'll keep our retirements to ourselves. You know, there was a case one time with a couple who went through a divorce, and they were both high-level senior execs. So they were well-paid. They were older at the time of their divorce, kind of near retirement. And in their divorce decree, which I think they weren't thinking ahead when they did this, his said, I want half of her retirement, and hers said, I want half of his. So at the time she was planning to retire from the government, she would have to give up half of her retirement to her former spouse. Well, she realized very quickly that she couldn't live on half of her retirement without half of his, and of course he wasn't ready to retire yet, so that caused a problem for her financially. So you have to think in terms of what's this going to really play out in the future? Does this make sense for both of us when it comes to trying to retire at some point and having enough money to retire comfortably?
I'm going to probably go way too far with this question, but what you just said, I'm thinking if somebody knew your good information prior to the divorce, I'd imagine that brings up a real degree of sophistication, let's call it, of how you then measure the benefits that somebody would get that if they didn't know that. I mean,
I never knew this until recent years, but you know, of course the benefits are one thing and we can direct people of how they work, but I can't really give that kind of advice. But a lawyer is in the divorce is not really going to help you do the most equitable division. They're just going to do what you ask them to do. They're going to make sure that your wishes are followed in that divorce decree. So the next person that you might want to consult with if you're worried about the financial equity of this agreement is a certified financial planner who has this separate designation as a certified divorce financial planner, where they can really help you kind of amortize the value of these benefits and figure out, is it better to give you the house and I keep my retirement, and to give you some idea of how that might play out down the road. So that might be a good person to consult with if you're concerned about making sure this is an equitable agreement for both of you.
Well, that would, I would imagine the person on the other, the listening to the provisions, the calculations there have to be significant because X dollars
well,
today.
Well, they're unknowns. We don't know the date of our death. We don't know when we're really going to retire. So there's a lot of things that have to have some what-if scenarios played out to make sure that you're doing something that's going to be practical for both of you.
Well, talking about that, I mean, our focus here was on divorces and beneficiary forms and the like. But talking with folks that you provide information to at the seminars, but I'd imagine more deeply when they come to you for consulting, what do you find that you thought that they would know but they don't know? Man, that's not a fair question. What surprises have you found where somebody said, I just don't get that. You know, why do I have to do this? Or if I work another 3 years, how come my annuity doesn't go up by, you know, 10%?
Right. Well, I think there's a few things there. I mean, you and I both run into a lot of times where employees learn so much from coming to the class that really did surprise them. In fact, you'll have employees who thought they knew exactly all the answers to the retirement questions, and then there's one little thing that they didn't know that can make a big difference. Sometimes when an employee is eligible to retire, in fact, I had an uncle, I've talked about my Uncle Steve a lot because he retired from federal service back in 1978 and he has since passed away, but I remember talking to him about his retirement and he became eligible when he was 55 and he already had his 30 years in, so he went ahead and retired because he was eligible. And later on in life, you know, he had been retired for 34 years, So he had said to me that he wished it, that he realized that he could have stayed on board a few more years, and he really enjoyed his work. Not that he wasn't financially okay in retirement, but he really missed the camaraderie of work and the pleasure and the satisfaction he got from working on the job. So sometimes it's not just about the money. Then you have to think of not just the financial side, but the mental preparations you make for retirement and making that change in your life and doing something that you really enjoy in this next chapter of life. So I think we sometimes underestimate that part of retirement planning as well.
Okay, let's go back to, I guess, the subject of the show, the divorce side. And you've worked, I'm sure, on both sides, the federal employee, mm-hmm. retiree, and the spouse. What do you find, maybe maybe neither one of them come in with full knowledge of what they're entitled to or what one has to give up and what the other one does. How do you get that across? Do you have some responses that you've taken from the responses that you give either in class or on the net?
The main question I get is usually, because I'm not an attorney, obviously, or a financial planner, but sometimes employees who have gone through a divorce are very confused about exactly what their former spouse is entitled to. And rightly so, because if they go to their agency's HR office, they can get a retirement estimate of their retirement, but it doesn't show the division that was spelled out in the divorce decree. And the agency, by rights, cannot provide that. So what the employee needs to do is either to really read that divorce decree and see if they can interpret the benefit payable to the former spouse, or go back to the attorney and ask them to interpret it. Or sometimes I can help with that as well, because usually it's written in pretty standard language where the former spouse may have been awarded 50% of the marital share of that retirement. So that means that during the years or months of marriage, that former spouse is going to get half of your retirement for that period of time. So if you were working for 30 years and you were married for 20 of those years, then that 20-year piece of your retirement, half of that may have been awarded to the former spouse, depending on what it says in the divorce decree. So sometimes I'll help people kind of review that and help them get an understanding of what that really says.
Okay. Now, over the years, I know you work with a particular group of pre-retirees, remain nameless, not agencies so much, but what they do. And they have somewhat of a high incidence of divorce relative to what other people don't do. What have you found where somebody was really unhappy or somebody was really happy with the rules for those folks?
Yeah, well, some people, of course, will say that they're relieved that they were able to settle the divorce without taking part of their retirement, especially if they were divorced 20 years ago. They're so happy that they can now retire and get their full annuity without regard to a portion of that going on for the rest of their life to the former spouse. The other thing I'll find is that sometimes people don't realize these are lifetime benefits. You know, if it says you're going to get a portion of that retirement benefit, it's for life. And if the employee who has retired has passed away, that benefit stops. There was a case one time I read about through one of the law firms that we've worked with through the years, where they had a client who was married to a federal employee. He retired. He had a long career of federal service, and he was under the old system where he didn't pay into Social Security. He didn't have a TSP account. This was years ago. And when he passed away, she was not awarded a survivor benefit. And at the time of the divorce, she was awarded half of his retirement because they had been married his whole career. So she was really taken by surprise to realize that there was nothing in the divorce decree that mentioned a survivor benefit. She was under the impression that when he retired, he elected the spousal benefit for her, but she didn't realize that that election ended the day the marriage ended. So that survivor benefit has to also go into the divorce agreement. Otherwise, it ends. That retirement benefit ends when the employee who retired passes away.
Wow.
That could be a real shock, and it was very unfortunate.
Yeah, years ago, I think this is way. I had an individual, again, in a high divorce profession, let's call it, and was just livid that the divorce settlement required that he pay whatever he put into the system, and let's call it $50,000, you know, the involuntary amount withheld each pay period. And I said, you're going to pay that amount and nothing more? That's right. That's not fair. And I said, please, borrow the money. Do whatever you have to do. Pay it. Because if the spouse received an annuity, a portion of the annuity, that would far surpass whatever that cash would have been.
That's right.
But that was a long time
ago.
Yeah,
that's the same thing almost when it comes to, you know, divvying up the house as opposed to the retirement. Sometimes that makes sense as well. So that's why I do think it's important to do some financial planning when you're planning out the real details of the divorce agreement. Because what sounds good when you're 42 years old can look a whole lot different 20 years from now when you're ready to retire at 62. So really have someone else who maybe has the bird's eye view of that whole situation be able to help you understand that long range effect of what you're deciding to do today. It can be a very different situation 20 years later.
Yeah, in my world, somebody will come in and say, I'm not receiving much, and the divorce was years ago. Or the other one, I don't think I've ever heard it, but I've heard it jokingly, well, I'm not paying too much. And it wasn't a joke, it was serious, but the recipient sees it the other way. But it's 20 years down the road. I'm not so sure that if it was 2 years down the road, you could get it changed.
That's right. That's right. And another thing that I wanted to mention about this, because this can be very important as well. So at the time you retire and you make the election to either provide or do a partial or not to provide a survivor benefit, we call that a permanent election. In other words, you can't really make too many changes to that unless someone passes away or if you in the event of a divorce. But I had two times in my career where I've seen this happen where an employee retired, the spouse waived his or her right to the survivor benefit. And within just months after the retirement, that employee who had just retired was diagnosed with a terminal illness. Well, a lot of people don't know that you have an 18-month window that if you waive the survivor benefit or elected a partial benefit, you can restore that full survivor benefit within 18 months of the retirement date. And that type of situation would have been ideal to make that kind of a change. So, you know, you hope that doesn't happen, but I've seen it happen twice. And both times the person didn't know they had that opportunity to make that change. So they passed away and the surviving spouse received only a return of the retirement contributions rather than the lifelong valuable survivor benefit.
Life insurance. You know, I'm the sponsor of the show, WAPA, has a program that significant amount. So working again with people you don't do divorce planning, but you oftentimes are brought in after the divorce decree has been written to, you know, give it a second glance. Do you ever find that people say, gee, I have a need for life insurance that I didn't know that I had before, because if I can use the life insurance proceeds to not draw down against, say, the thrift or cash, do you ever work with anyone with that?
Well, we do talk about life insurance because about the time I generally meet with employees is around age 50 and beyond. And that's about the age that whether it's WAPA or FEGLI or just about any other life insurance rates can get kind of expensive when it's getting on the other side of 50, where the insurance company knows that at some point they may have to pay a benefit. So we reevaluate, you know, the need for that life insurance. You know, is there a mortgage? Do you still have children that need to go through school or weddings to pay for, those kinds of things? And you make a good point, too, that if you leave the spouse or the former spouse with life insurance proceeds, that can go a long ways towards preserving the savings to last out throughout their lifetime as well, or to maybe take care of some long-term care needs. But you have to weigh that against the cost of maintaining that insurance. So sometimes I'll refer people to a financial planner or maybe to an elder law attorney or estate planning attorney to help them figure out exactly what their life insurance needs are, you know, how much is worth paying for, and should it be term life or should it be whole life that's going to serve that need. So insurance planning is kind of a lifelong event where you have to kind of go back and reevaluate your needs for it, you know, what it's costing you as opposed to the need to have it. Because in the case of FEGLI, every 5 years, the optional FEGLI prices go up. And with option B, which is multiples of the employee's salary up to five times their basic pay rate, that can be a significant withholding from a paycheck, let alone a significant withholding from a retirement benefit. So it's really pays to pay attention to how much life insurance you're carrying, maybe reevaluate that from time to time to make sure your need for that insurance is still there as the price goes up.
Well, thank you. And while I'm not a financial planner, I kind of border on it. And people will say, well, why would I need $1 million worth of life insurance, depending on the age? And the answer is a lot more you need it than somebody maybe better off with a higher high three, et cetera. Maybe they don't need as much, but it's going to be more expensive if they do. It's better to latch on to it. What do they say? Come early and go often. So.
Right. That's right. And $1 million today is not going to provide a whole lot of income. That equates to maybe about $40,000 a year of income to the person who's trying to create income from that insurance. So it's not as much as it used to be.
No, and then there might be dependents, there might be, you know, other issues, it could be health issues. So, yeah, that money's going to last, and it isn't just necessarily to pay the utility and grocery and car note.
That's right.
And so what's been, let's say, your a surprise to you that when somebody comes to you, they really didn't know how the annuity worked or the options that they had?
I'm trying to think of some other surprise scenarios, because it's each individual has something different that kind of clicks with them once you start talking about it, and it's just like a light bulb goes off. So for some people, it's the discussion of the basic retirement benefit and how that works and plays out in retirement. For other people, it's understanding how Social Security claiming can really impact the value of the benefits you're going to get over your lifetime and possibly over your spouse as well. And in others, it's just understanding how the TSP can be turned into income. It's like people really underestimate the value of the power of that savings in your thrift and how that can really make your retirement much more comfortable. So it varies from individual, but it's always nice to try to find that one thing that's really going to make a difference in someone's life and make their retirement more comfortable, or make them a little bit more money that they didn't know that they really had hidden in their benefit package. So that's my satisfaction.
Okay, and I asked you that question. I don't always look at the clock. We don't have much time, but I really messed up. How does somebody contact you? Sorry.
Well, they can either contact me through nitpinc.com or through retirefederal.com. So take your pick. They're both going to work, and I really appreciate the opportunity to work with you and be here on the show with you as well.
And ditto from me. Anyway, thanks for listening, folks, and we'll be back next week. Bye, Tammy.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.